Thank you, and thank you, Lloyd, for asking me to speak. Jesse, that was great. I could totally relate. I had a lot of the same experiences myself. Kristen, alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 18th, 2003. I have a home group. It's Bayshore Presbyterian, Monday, Wednesday, Saturdays. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. Let's see. So what I'm going to tell you is just my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism. I'm not a representative of AA, take everything with a grain of salt. Just to qualify, I look pretty professional and normal in front of you now, but I assure you, I am a bedwetting, blackout drunk. My alcoholism developed when I was a teenager. It onset after only a couple years of drinking. I think I started drinking like a normal 14-year-old. when you go to a high school party and you drink and that kind of thing. And my alcoholism, I got to the point where I was blacking out and drinking every weekend by the time I was like 15. Couldn't stop by the time I was just about 15, 16. So it was only a couple years. And I can't tell you how that happened or why that happened. It just happened, you know. It could be genetic. I've got some alcoholism in the family. I don't know. I stopped trying to figure things out with alcoholism and with AA because every time I did that, it just created roadblocks and I never got anywhere. I just got drunk. You know, and consequences just kept happening, and they kept happening worse and worse exponentially. So, I had the same experiences that a lot of people did. I stopped living life slowly. I was in high school when I first started drinking. I was in sports. I had friends. And I love alcohol. Let me just start here for a second. When I drank that first time, granted, I think I vomited all over somebody's lawn after like two drinks, but I felt like I could breathe for the first time. I felt like I could finally be the person that I always wanted to be. I could be funny, I could be pretty, I could be witty. I didn't give a fuck about you. I didn't give a fuck about me anymore. I mean, you know, like what was going on with my head and my life and my crazy anxiety and, you know, am I good enough? Are you good? You know, everything just stopped and I could relax and enjoy my life. And that's when I fell in love with alcohol. And I didn't know it at the time. But looking back, you know, before I drank, I was nervous. I was anxious. I thought it was normal to be kind of depressed. And alcohol fixed all that. And like I said, I started drinking like a normal person, and then my drinking became more and more frequent, and I started experimenting with dry goods. I, too, was a big pothead, and I did the marijuana maintenance for a while, trying to be sober and trying to not drink. But like I had shared a minute ago, my consequences just got exponentially worse, you know. First it's blackouts, then it's, you know, waking up and not knowing where you are, and then it's, you know, crashing cars, and then your friends don't want to answer your calls the next day, and then you're dropping out of high school, and then, you know, you're dropping out of work, and now your parents kick you out. You know, it's just, and it's couch surfing, and, you know, sleeping over dudes' houses you don't really know, and, you know, it's just shady. And it got to a point where I knew I couldn't control my drinking. My dad was a recovering alcoholic. I asked him, I think it was more of a manipulation play to get out of trouble, but I asked him to take me to a meeting. And he took me to an AA meeting. I grew up in Connecticut, in Middletown, Connecticut. And it was like a bunch of older dudes, some homeless dudes, some not. I mean, it was just older men and maybe a couple of women. And I was just like, I was 16, you know, this is not me. I mean, I may drink too much, I may party too hard, but I haven't lost jobs, I haven't lost, you know, husbands or houses, and that really wasn't true, but that's what my mind was telling me. I immediately saw you on the outside and identified my inside out and my outside. And, you know, thank God the pain got great enough. Those consequences kept coming. Just when you think my bottom couldn't get any worse, bam. You know, I ended up, I went to rehab after a series of events, and I think fast forward, I was like 19, 18, 19, and I got stoned in rehab, and I signed myself out because they got mad at me for getting stoned and tried to restrict me. And I ended up trying to control drink. And I did that for about a month, and I drank 6 Molson Ice and went out and hit a tree with my car. And I wasn't even drunk, really. I mean, maybe I was, but, you know, when you're drinking hard, I mean, being drunk isn't really being drunk. You're just kind of getting by, you know, and driving with one eye. You know, seriously. I mean, I might be falling all over the place, and you can't understand what I'm saying to you, but I don't feel, you know, like I'm having a good time. But anyway, so I wake up. I was in a car. I guess I died, right? I hit a tree really bad. I broke all the bones in my face. I broke my hip. I died on the table, and... anyway, I come out of this coma after about 2 weeks, and I look in the mirror and I see my face all jacked up, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, maybe I really can't drink. And so from that point on, I was 19, I proceeded to, I admitted I couldn't, I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable, but I didn't hit a car smoking weed. I didn't hit a car doing other dry goods. So I proceeded to do the maintenance thing to not drink. That lasted until I was 21. I attempted to come into AA again for the second time, and I was in Vermont. I had moved to Vermont to go to college because I was a big Deadhead / Fish fan, and I really loved dry goods. So, because I was a drunk, and you know, I loved what Jesse touched on about how I can be a psycho sober, because that's what I found. You know, whenever I attempted to not do anything, you know, not drink, not do maintenance goods, just be straight, I was psychotic. I felt insane. I mean, this is why I drank. I would wake up in the morning and I would just be overcome with anxiousness, fear. I didn't know that's what it was, but fear, and just my brain running nonstop about, you know, what are you going to do about this? What about this? Oh, do you remember what you did yesterday? Oh, this guy's going to, oh, this one, you're not working. Your family's never going to talk to you again. You're never going to get married. You're never going to have a life. You suck. You're dumb. You dropped out of high school. You know, like that fucking crazy beating yourself up and just catastrophizing and creating shit that isn't there. And so I know what that's like, and I'll tell you right now, you know, fast forward, the only thing that's cured that in me is working the steps of AA and continuing to practice a program. Yeah, I wish I could tell you it was something easier, and it's actually not that hard, but, you know, I'm lazy, I don't want to do anything. All I want to do are things that make me feel good, hence, you know, drink and whatnot. So, you know, I tried to get sober when I was 21. I was 20, and I started going to AA because I was batshit crazy, even on the maintenance, batshit. And I was going to jump, you know, I was going to kill myself or something. And so I'm like, okay, let's try this AA thing again. So I went to AA, I did the maintenance, I didn't tell anybody. Before I went to the AA though, and I was 20, it was like the summer before 21, and my head was like this. How are you going to not drink? How are you going to not drink when you're 21? You're going to be 21. You're not going to go to a bar. You're not going to drink a growler. Those things are cool, right? What about, you know, what are those beers that they have up there? The microbrews and all that. I'm 45 now, so bear with me. It was 25 years ago. My head just went full blown. You are going to drink. You have to drink. How are you going to be 21 and not drink, you know? And I was so fucking crazy. I was going to drink. And so that's why I went to AA for the second time. And I did the maintenance. I never told anybody. I worked up to step 5. You know, never really got honest, but I did all the 5 steps. And I actually felt a real relief when I did the 4th and 5th step. But I never got honest. And so slowly but surely, I stopped going to meetings. And while I never drank again, I got crazier and crazier on the inside. The anxiety never went away, it got worse. The insanity in my brain, that squirrel cage of just ongoing catastrophizing and negativity and victimization, you know, that I'm the victim and everyone else is again, all that shit just got worse. And so finally, you know, I had moved down to St. Petersburg to go to Eckerd, and I graduated, I don't know how, and all my friends were going off and like, going to graduate school or getting careers, and I was like sitting on the south side of St. Pete in my shitbox condo, you know, suicidal, like completely suicidal. And I was about to go to the Skyway and just take it. Because I couldn't live straight. I couldn't live drinking, and I couldn't live on the maintenance. So I couldn't take it. And for some reason, in my head, I heard, you know, why don't you try AA? What do you got to lose? And I was like, okay, fine. You know, so I went to the Blind Pass group out on St. Pete Beach, and I went to a noon meeting there, and they tried to hug me, and I did not like it. And so I was immediately like identifying my way out of there, and like I studied religion in college, and I know more than you, and I I've done this before, and you know, it's crazy what my mind lies to me about. But I did notice at the end of that hour, through all that chatter in my brain, all of a sudden I felt a little better. The anxiety volume turned down. That need to fill the hole in the soul with a substance, with something, it just kind of, it eased off a little. And I could just take a deep breath for the first time in a long time. And I thought, shoot, you know, I don't know if I'm into any of this stuff, but if I can just not do, you know, maintenance or drink or jump off the Skyway for the next 24 hours and come back and feel this again, I might do it. So that's what I did. At first, all I could do was just show up to meetings. I didn't want to talk to you. I didn't want you to know I was new, even though it was obvious. I didn't want to sponsor, you know, because then you'd know I'm new. I just showed up. And because I got that good feeling, that feeling of peace and relaxation at the end of the hour, I kept coming back because I'm addicted to feeling good. So eventually, they kept asking me, you know, who's your sponsor? How sober are you? Going to pick up a chip? What are you celebrating? Who's your sponsor? And what's your home group? You know, and I was 25 when I came into the rooms, and my home group back then was St. Pete Beach YPG. And finally, I ended up getting a sponsor. My sponsor is this woman named Jackie out on the beach, and she was speaking at Blind Pass one night, and this is what she said that hooked me. Well, not only was she like independent and nice, and wasn't like real big book preachy or anything, you know, how like some people just, you can feel the bullshit. She was real, and she was happy. She was sober, real, and happy. She traveled all over the world. She was single. She didn't have kids. I was just like, wow. She had double-digit sobriety. This is what she said. She said, you know, whenever I have a problem, I go to my God in prayer, and I pray to them about what my issue is, and they only come back to me with three answers, and that's yes, later, or I have something better planned for you. That shit still makes me like tear up when I say that, because you know, I grew up in a religion where you know, it wasn't all that religious, but it was that condemning God, and I was like, no way, I can't get down with that, you know. And when she gave me this concept of a God that's awesome no matter what, you know, I was like, shit, that's possible, you know, and that sounds great if that's real. And you know what, speaking of a higher power, I didn't really believe in much of anything when I came in here, but one thing that settled okay with me was a higher power being nature. You know, I could look into the sky, I could look into the ocean, I could look into the mountains, and I could see that, yeah, that's a power greater than me all day, you know, like I can identify with that. I could just see it. I could understand it. I always want to intellectualize things. You know, that was one of my biggest problems coming into AA, was I wanted proof that there was a higher power. I want to see it happen. You know, I want to see him do some, move a microphone, you know, like. And what my experience has been and was is that a higher power for me was more a feeling. I've never really conceptually, I couldn't really tell you what it is now. All I can tell you is, I experimented with prayer. You guys told me, fake it till you make it. I said, okay, I'll show you prayer doesn't work, and I'll try it. And you also told me to pray for willingness in the morning and thank a higher power for keeping you sober at night. And I said, okay. So I would do these things, and I would see that they worked. And I tell you they worked because I would see myself take actions that before prayer I couldn't take. For example, I was sitting on my couch watching Judge Judy, stuffing my face with shit food. And I'd be like, I know it's Friday night and I'm supposed to go to the YPG. I don't want to go. God, I'm not going. If you want me to go, I'll go, but I'm not going. Make me, right? Or something stupid like that, like a real dick. And All of a sudden, my phone rang. It was Melissa. She said, "Kristen, hey, I'm coming to pick you up. We're going to go to YPG. I'll talk to you later. Bye." And I'm like, that's heavy, right? And that was real. That really happened. And I was like, oh, shit. And so little coincidences like that kept happening in my life. I would experiment. I would pray. I ended up getting this job. This is funny. So I was unemployed for like the first year of my sobriety, and my mother would harass me, and she'd be like, you know, a job's not gonna call you. You better get out there, you know. And I was like, so I went to like a temp agency or something, and at 1 month, all of a sudden, this temp agency called me, and I was like, hi, ma, you know. I ended up getting this job at the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce. Worst job ever, but it had me sit at a desk all day with nothing to do, and I was able to like do my steps, which was awesome, because I don't know that I really would have done my fourth step. I know, random. I've been at this job for like a year, okay? And it's awful, it's miserable. I'm making like 12 grand a year, which even back then sucked ass, you know? And it was just awful. And all of a sudden my phone rings, and it's the other Melissa who's in the program. And she said, Kristen? Oh, is this Kristen Murphy? Oh, that's me. I'm sorry, I meant to get Kristen such and such. Are you okay? And I'm like, no, I hate my job. I can't do it anymore. And she's like, wait, you have a college degree, right? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, my mom works for a major insurance company and they're hiring. Maybe you should send me your resume. And I'm like, really? You know, I kid you not, okay? That has been my career for the last 15, 18 years. And it's funny because I am a drunk, pothead, burnout, hippie, right? So I had to go to this corporate interview. And first they did the telephone one. And all of a sudden, words came out of my mouth that I had never used before, like with lots of syllables. And it was crazy. Like, and you know, let me fast forward. My experience in AA has been that what I needed to do and what I did was I faked it till I made it. I prayed in the morning, I prayed at night. Didn't matter if I believed in a higher power. Didn't matter if I believed in steps or you guys. I just had to take the action, right? And through taking the action and working through the steps, regardless of what I intellectually thought or felt about it, changes happened. I developed a belief and a relationship with a power that's greater than myself, okay? And I lost the desire to drink and do other mind-altering substances to change the way I feel. And I got relatively happy. Bizarre. So my experience has also been that I don't have to do much of anything. You know, step 6 and 7, it talks about our character defects and turning them over and, you know, my experience has been, all I have to do is the 5 things every day. That has been the game changer of my recovery. So today I pray in the morning. I do a reading. I usually pray in the shower, you know, just because I have to do it. I do a reading. I do 3 readings. I do the daily reflection. I do some Bible verses. I'm not a Christian. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Maybe I am. I don't know. I don't identify with any religion. I think they're all pretty cool. I take what I need and I leave the rest. And that's kind of what I learned from you guys. So I read a couple of those positive verses. And then I read the daily Emmett Fox Around the Year reading. And I mentioned that book because it really helped me to come to the belief that God's will for me was actually wicked cool and way better than anything I had already created. Because, you know, when you guys talk to me about this third step, you're like, turn your life and your will over the care of God and your son. Okay, you know, that sounds awful, right? Because I thought it was like Mother Teresa. I thought I had to like give up all my worldly possessions and go like volunteer somewhere. And I'm serious. That's what I thought that meant. And the reality in my experience was that that's not what it means at all. It means, you know, that I just have a life that's joyous and fulfilled and happy and awesome. And I didn't even know what that was. I thought I knew what it was. I thought it was things and guys and, you know, getting messed up. And what it actually is like showing up for work and working and traveling, and I started sailing again, and just finding out who I am and what I like, and being a fit spiritual condition to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. Because who knew, like, helping actually makes you feel good. But anyway, so that book was critical. And I had to, when I read it, I wasn't into Jesus at the time at all. I don't know that I am still. It's all good, but I just keep away from religions. But when I got that book, I had to erase some of the religious talk and the Jesus references and just put higher power. Thank you. Because at the time, I just couldn't take it. Now, I don't even care. I don't, you know, it's whatever. It's cool. So just if you ever come across books like that, that's just my only suggestion. Just keep moving. Keep reading. Don't think about it. 6 and 7. I thought I had to, like, work on this shit, you know? And my experience was that all I have to do are those 5 things, and God takes care of all this shit for me. All of it. All of it. And I can't emphasize that enough. So pray in the morning, do the 3 readings, meditate. Got into meditation like 10 years into sobriety. Some boyfriend dumped me, or I don't know what, some catastrophic event, who the fuck knows. I love pain. No, I don't. What's really cool is that after pain comes immense spiritual growth and way more happiness. I am not into going there, like into the pain part, but I like the after effect because it forces me to drink or take action. I went to the Unity Church. They taught me how to meditate at some class. I started meditating, and what I noticed is that I felt like I took a Xanax. So we all like feeling good, right? So I started meditating. I worked my way up. I did 5 minutes, and then 10, and then 15, and then 20, and then 30. So I started meditating for like 30 minutes every day. And what I noticed was a complete change in my psyche, like a complete change in how I react. My emotional sobriety showed up. I'd never had emotional sobriety in my life, even before I started drinking, you know? And all of a sudden, you know, shit would go down, and I wouldn't react, and I wouldn't get short, and I would just be calm and like have a level head, and I was like, what the hell is this? You know, it's awesome, give me more. So I started doing that every day. And again, I don't do any of this stuff, and I know this is an awful thing to say, to be a good AA. I do it because it gives me relief, it helps me to be happy, and I don't drink. And that's my goal, you know, don't drink, be happy. And if I can help someone else and be of service to God, hell yeah. But selfishly, I just want to not drink and be happy, right? So, back to 6 and 7, you know, through doing those things, and then the other 2 things or 3 things are go to a meeting, talk to another alcoholic, and pray at night. And I don't go to a meeting every day anymore. I did in the beginning. Now I try to do every other day. That's what's my sweet spot. That's what works for me. But I do all those other things every day. And, you know, it's funny. Amazing things have happened just out of doing those 5 things on the regular, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. Not only have my insides changed, my outsides changed exponentially. You know, I've had a career for however many years, I said, since 2005. And like, I've gotten promoted, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't always deserve to get promoted. You know, I can be a little lazy. And it was crazy. And I was in miserable, in this one miserable job once, the job that I got with the phone call, actually, the second phone call. And I don't know. I just, you know, pain was a motivator for me. And so I ended up working on my resume, applying for other jobs. I got this other job at a different insurance company, and it's been the biggest blessing because it's a good job and I'm happy. And that's pretty good. I mean, relatively, it's corporate, give me a break, you know, but relatively. You know, those character defects and things have just, they haven't gone away. You'll notice if you're driving when I'm driving anywhere, you'll see. But they've turned down so much that it's absolutely unbelievable. It really is. Like, you know that thing in your head where you're always, or I used to have this thing in my head, and I still do sometimes, but where I'm always comparing myself to you, and especially like other women, like competitive, you know, and it's gone away completely, like entirely. And that's spectacular. You know, the fact that I don't have that inner dialogue insanity anymore of comparing, and it's just so tremendous. And you know, so I moved to Tampa about 10 years ago from St. Pete, and for this other job that's pretty cool now. And it was tough. I never really connected as well as I did in St. Petersburg. I still have all my St. Pete friends that I go back and see all the time. But it really gave me the opportunity to hear other people and go to different meetings. And you guys had some hard hitters up here. And when I say that, I think of like Guy King and Sandy, of course, and a couple of the others. And I love one of the things that they used to say, and I think Chuck Chamberlain, was that, you know, whenever I'm disturbed, whenever I'm upset about something, whenever I have a problem, you know, let's say it's my job, let's say it's my current husband, let's say it's, you know, finances, I don't have a job problem, a husband problem, a finance problem. I have a God problem. Because when I am spiritually fit and connected to a higher power, and, you know, that divine flow is going through, it's not all blocked up with thoughts and ego and, you know, resentment and insanity. When that channel's clean and the higher power's connecting with me, doesn't really matter what's going on, because everything works out in the end. And I was never a believer of that until I got sober and saw this shit happen day after day, year after year, month after month. I didn't get half of what I deserved. You know, I mean, I did some messed up stuff in sobriety too, that I really should have felt some consequences for, and I never did. And instead, you know, I got peace and happiness and forgiveness. And so today, you know, whenever I'm disturbed, it's obnoxious, but I know it's because I'm disconnected from a higher power. And what I need to do is take action. I need to call another alcoholic. I need to talk to a sponsee, talk to my sponsor, go to a meeting, take some kind of action. My sponsor always said, you know, don't stay home alone for more than 4 hours. She has this 4-hour rule, right? Go out, go to Walgreens, you know, get out of the house, get out of wherever you are. Don't be home alone. Move a muscle, change a thought. Action, action, action. And that's totally worked for me in recovery, is, you know, not listening to this and just taking action, whatever that looks like. You know, today I have all my family back. I was able to make amends to them, and I still do living amends. And that's pretty cool. They didn't want anything to do with me when I first got sober. Today I'm married. I got married 5 years ago, which is crazy. Let me say this. If any of you are single, okay, I'm going to be real. It sucks sometimes. It does. But let me tell you, I was single for, not married. I mean, I was dating, I had boyfriends, for 13 years in sobriety. I don't know, whatever 5 minus 19 is. 14. Anyway, 14 years. And I saw all my sober friends like getting sober and having kids. And I was just like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I'm doing all this shit. I'm doing the 5 things. I'm a good person. Why not me? You know? And what happened during those 14 years was I figured out who I was. I figured out who I liked. I traveled, what I liked, not who I liked. I traveled around the world. Like, I went to China with a freaking sober trip. That was crazy. You know, I did all kinds of, I went all over the world by myself and had all these experiences that if I were with a significant other, I would never have had. Because when you're a single traveler and a single person, you have to do stuff. Like, you can't sit at home. You have to say yes to coffee after the meeting, or yes to going river rafting, or yes to, you know, sober stock. And so I was forced to do all these things that I had no idea would help me to find what I really like and who I am, because I drank all that shit away. I mean, you know, I was too young to even figure that out by the time I started drinking. So again, if you're single and you're looking for the one, I will tell you, they are probably out there, but, you know, time takes time. The single time is actually really, really good, even though I cried a lot. But anyway, I'm really happy to be here, and I'm really happy to be sober, and it's great to be at this group and to see this group here. I remember it back in the other church, too, and, I was thinking on the way over here, a couple of my friends started the St. Pete YPG group, and, I'll be honest with you, I think only one of the three is sober. Maybe two, I don't know, I don't know, but, and that's the reality of AA, or alcoholism, rather. Is that it's no joke. I have no doubt, no reservation, no hesitation that if I choose to drink again, I will die. And if I don't die, you're going to die. Whoever's in front of my car or in front of my knife or whatever crazy shit my drunk mind comes up with. Seriously. And there's no reservations because the consequences got so bad. I'm terrified to drink again. And so that's why AA is so great, because I tried everything else. Nothing else worked for me. If things work for other people, that's great. For me, this has not only helped me to not drink, but not drink, be relatively happy, meet life like chill, and actually be a part of life and help others sometimes. One more thing. So, get this, right? This is the first year I thought about helping others, like, really. And I'll tell you why. I don't know why. I'll tell you how it happened. It's fucked up, I know. I mean, not, like, people in AA, but my family. And it's maybe not the first time, but it's the first time it was a natural thought. Like, my first thought, which is crazy. There's drama going on with my family. They have a business, and this one screwed this one over, and my mom's out, and it's just a shit show. My brother's out, and I want to get in there, and I want to go corporate because I think I know something. And then there were some other things happening, and with my dad and his health, and I want to get in there and tell those doctors, and the thought came to me to just breathe, let go, and help, and don't get involved. Just help. So when it came to seeing lawyers and having business meetings, I showed up with my computer, I took notes, I kept my mouth shut, I sent the emails of the notes out to my family. When it came to my dad, I went to his appointment, I took the notes, I asked a question for him, and took notes, and then I gave him the notes, and I sat back. And that's crazy. That's crazy for me because I am still selfish, self-centered to the extreme, and not as bad, but to have that be a natural first reaction thought is awesome. And that's what I'm talking about doing the five things every day. God's changing who I am on the inside as long as I take those actions. The minute I stop taking those actions, tomorrow I can be a raging lunatic, a savage. I heard somebody say savage the other day. I'm like, yes, that's me. All I have to do is just not pray in the morning. It's just that simple. I mean, I have a daily reprieve, just like the book talks about. So I have to maintain that spiritual condition if I want to not only not drink, but just be okay, So, hey, thank you again for asking me to speak, Lloyd. And this was really great. Thank you, Jesse. That was cool. That's it. Thanks.